Welcome to the deep dive. Ever wonder how governments try to keep the economic train on the tracks?
It's a big question.
It is. Today, we're diving into exactly that, looking at how policymakers attempt to steer, you know, the massive complex engine that is the national economy.
Mm-hmm.
We've pulled together a stack of sources that give us a really clear view of the core goals governments aim for and, well, the main tools they use to try and hit those targets.
That's right. Our mission for this deep dive is to cut through the noise and really understand the key macroeconomic objectives governments prioritize and the different policy levers they pull in their efforts to achieve them.
We're focusing on the big three that, you know, dominate economic headlines and government agendas pretty much everywhere. Keeping prices stable.
I'm sure.
Ensuring most people who want a job can find one. So low employment and fostering sustainable economic growth. Sounds simple, maybe.
But it's a constant balancing act, really.
Absolutely is.
Think of macroeconomic policy as the government's way of sort of managing the overall health and performance of the national economy. It's about trying to influence those big picture indicators.
And they do this using a whole toolkit of instruments, right?
Mm-hmm.
You've probably heard terms like fiscal policy or monetary policy.
Exactly. Those are the major categories of tools they deploy to influence things like the rate of inflation, the level of employment, and, you know, how fast the economy is growing.
And these aren't just abstract numbers for economists to argue about.
No, not at all. These objectives are fundamentally about creating a stable environment, one that encourages confidence, allows for planning, and ultimately aims to improve prosperity and living standards for everyone. It's foundational to everything else.
Okay, let's jump into the first big objective our sources highlight, price stability. What are we really talking about here?
So price stability, as our material describes it, basically means maintaining a low and crucially predictable rate of inflation over time.
Low and predictable.
Yeah. It's not necessarily about prices never changing, but keeping the average price level from, you know, fluctuating wildly or rising too quickly.
Why is that so crucial? I mean, a little bit of inflation doesn't sound terrible, does it?
Well, the key is stability and being low. Unstable prices inject just massive uncertainty into the economy.
Okay.
If inflation is high and unpredictable, it's incredibly difficult for you to plan for the future, like saving for retirement or deciding on a big purchase.
Right.
And for businesses, it makes investing really risky because they don't know what their costs or future revenues will actually be worth. Plus, high inflation directly erodes your purchasing power. The money you earn today buys less tomorrow. Simple as that.
And I've heard the flip side. Falling prices, deflation, that can be bad too, which seems kind of counterintuitive.
Exactly. While lower prices sound good on the surface, widespread deflation encourages people to delay spending.
Waiting for it to get even cheaper.
Precisely. So you wait for prices to fall even further. This reduces demand for goods and services, leading to falling profits for businesses and ultimately job losses. So governments typically aim for a low positive rate of inflation, maybe around 2%, not zero or negative.
Okay, that makes sense. So with that goal in mind, what does a government actually do to try and keep prices stable? What are the tools?
Well, the main heavy hitter here is usually the central bank managing monetary policy.
Right, the Fed in the US, Bank of England, ECB.
Exactly. And the most common tool is adjusting interest rates. When the central bank raises interest rates, it makes borrowing money more expensive for businesses, for consumers buying houses or cars.
Okay.
This tends to slow down spending and investment, reducing overall demand in the economy, which helps put the brakes on inflation.
And what about controlling the amount of money actually circulating in the economy?
That's the other key monetary tool managing the money supply. If the central bank limits how quickly the total amount of money in the economy grows, it helps contain those inflationary pressures. Now, fiscal policy, that's the government's own spending and taxing decisions, can also play a role, though it's often seen as less precise for fine-tuning prices day to day.
How does that work?
By reducing its own spending or perhaps increasing taxes, the government essentially pulls money out of the economy. That decreases overall demand, which can help cool inflationary heat, sometimes called tight fiscal policy.
It's interesting how fiscal policy pops up here too, even if it's maybe like direct for inflation control. What about things that affect how much stuff costs to produce in the first place, like the supply side?
Good point. That's where supply side measures come in. Policies designed to increase competition in markets or boost the overall productivity of the economy. Well, they can help reduce production costs for businesses over the longer term.
So it costs less to make things.
Right. And when it costs less to produce goods and services, it helps mitigate what's called cost push inflation, the kind driven by rising input costs rather than just excessive demand.
Okay, got it. Let's shift gears then to the second major objective, low unemployment. What's the core idea here?
At its heart, low unemployment means that most people who are willing and able to work at the sort of prevailing wages can actually find jobs.
Pretty straightforward.
Yeah. Unemployment is counted as people actively looking for work but currently without a job.
And the negative impacts of high unemployment feel pretty obvious on a personal level, I think. But what are the broader economic consequences the sources mention?
Well, they point out several key problems. Firstly, it's just a massive waste of potential economic output. Think of all the goods and services those unemployed people could have produced. That's just lost.
Yeah, a drag on the whole economy.
Definitely. High unemployment also leads to reduced incomes for individuals, which often increases income inequality. And for the government, it means less tax revenue coming in and, at the same time, higher spending on things like unemployment benefits and other welfare support. It creates a real strain on public finances.
So how do governments try to tackle this? What are the main policy tools in the box for unemployment?
Fiscal policy is very prominent here, particularly using what we call expansionary measures.
So the opposite of the tight policy for inflation?
Exactly. When the government increases its own spending, say, on building new roads, schools, hospitals, that kind of thing, or it cuts taxes,
right,
it directly stimulates demand in the economy. Businesses see increased demand for their products or services, and they respond by hiring more people to produce more.
And the sources mentioned infrastructure specifically.
Yes, our source material highlights infrastructure projects because they not only create direct jobs, you know, construction workers, but also loads of indirect jobs in supply chains, materials, supporting industries. It has a ripple effect.
That makes a lot of sense. Building things requires people, lots of them. What else can they do on the supply side of things? Thinking about the workforce itself, maybe.
Yeah, supply side policies are crucial for the long run here, too. Investing in education and training programs helps equip people with the skills businesses actually need, improving their employability and their productivity.
Makes them better workers, basically.
Right. And then there are policies aimed at making the labor market more flexible. Things like potentially adjusting minimum wage rules or regulations around hiring and firing, which can be quite controversial, of course.
Yeah.
But the sources mention these as ways some argue could potentially lower barriers to employment. And importantly, supporting entrepreneurship and the growth of small businesses is often seen as a key engine for creating new jobs.
Does monetary policy, like messing with interest rates, also play a part in getting people hired?
It does, yeah. Indirectly, but it can be quite powerful. By lowering interest rates, the central bank makes it cheaper for businesses to borrow money for investment.
Like buying new machines or building factories?
Exactly. That kind of investment expands their capacity and often requires hiring more workers. Lower rates also tend to encourage households to borrow and spend more on big ticket items like homes or cars, which boosts overall demand in the economy. And again, that means businesses need to produce more and hire more people.
And I suppose in really tough times, like a deep recession, governments might step in even more directly.
Yes, absolutely. The sources mention direct employment measures. These become more common, especially during recessions when unemployment spikes significantly.
What sort of things?
This could involve government-funded job creation programs, perhaps supporting apprenticeships to get young people into work, or providing temporary subsidies to businesses specifically to encourage them to take on new employees rather than lay people off.
Okay. So that brings us to our third major objective, economic growth. This seems like the one everyone is always chasing, right? The headline number.
It is indeed. Economic growth essentially measures the increase in an economy's capacity to produce goods and services over time. It's the expansion of the pie, if you like.
And how is it measured usually?
Typically measured as the percentage increase in real gross domestic product, or GDP, adjusted for inflation.
And the importance here seems pretty fundamental, tied directly to prosperity.
Absolutely. Growth is generally what increases the total national income, and that usually translates into higher average living standards for people over time.
More money, better lives, generally speaking.
Generally, yes. A growing economy also creates more jobs as businesses expand to meet rising demand. And crucially for governments, it increases the tax revenue they collect.
That which funds everything else.
Right. It reduces the need for welfare payments because more people are working, and it provides the resources needed to invest in vital public services like healthcare, education, and infrastructure things, which in turn can further support growth and living standards. It's a virtuous cycle, ideally.
So how do governments use their toolkit to try and, well, make the economy bigger and more productive? What are the growth policies?
Fiscal policy is key again. Government spending on capital projects, things like improving the education system, building better transport links, upgrading healthcare facilities, these directly enhance the economy's long-term productive capacity.
Investing in the foundations.
Precisely. Tax incentives for businesses can also encourage them to invest in new technology, expand their operations, and innovate, all of which boost growth potential. And while things like unemployment benefits aren't direct growth drivers in themselves, they do support overall consumer demand by giving people money to spend, which is necessary for businesses to have a reason to grow.
And monetary policy. I'm sensing a pattern here.
Ha, yes. It's relevant across the board. Lower interest rates are generally seen as a big stimulus for business investment and consumer spending, both critical ingredients for economic growth.
And in really bad times.
During severe downturns, the sources mention more unconventional tools like quantitative easing or QE. That's where the central bank essentially injects money into the financial system, often by buying bonds, to try and lower long-term borrowing costs and really encourage lending and investment when rates are already near zero.
What about policies focused specifically on making the economy more efficient or innovative?
Yep. Those fall under supply-side policies aimed specifically at boosting growth potential, things like supporting research and development, maybe through grants or tax breaks, to encourage innovation.
Creating the next big thing.
Hopefully. Also, deregulation, if done carefully, can sometimes reduce burdens on businesses, making it easier for them to start up and expand. And as we mentioned under fiscal policy, investing in infrastructure, better roads, faster internet, reliable energy, that's a classic supply-side measure that enhances long-term productivity and growth potential.
And trade. Does how a country interacts with the rest of the world matter for growth?
Oh, definitely. Opening up to international trade expands the potential market for your domestic producers. It allows them to achieve economies of scale, grow larger, become more efficient, and potentially lead to export-led growth.
Selling more stuff abroad.
Basically, yes. And managing the exchange rate can also be used, sometimes controversially, to try and keep a country's exports competitively priced on the international market, boosting those export sales.
Wow. So looking at all this, it's clear that governments have this, whole range of tools, fiscal, monetary, supply side, even trade policy, and they're using them, or at least trying to use them, in different combinations to achieve these distinct but often related objectives.
That's absolutely the picture our sources paint. Policymakers are constantly trying to balance influencing the total demand for goods and services in the economy, that's mostly fiscal and monetary policy, with enhancing the economy's fundamental ability to produce those goods and services efficiently. That's the supply side.
And the overall goal?
Well, the aim is usually to reduce those painful ups and downs, the booms and busts, and foster stable, sustainable, long-term development and prosperity.
And understanding these objectives and the tools governments use isn't just for economists or people in government, is it? It really impacts you, the listener, directly.
It absolutely does. These policies influence the rate at which prices rise for the things you buy every day. They affect your chances of finding a job or getting a pay rise. They shape your potential for earning higher income over your lifetime.
And the services we rely on.
Exactly. And the quality of public services like schools and hospitals that your taxes fund. Knowing these basics is really key to making sense of economic news, understanding the debates around government policy, and frankly, knowing how these big decisions affect your own life.
It's pretty staggering, though, when you lay it all out, the sheer number and variety of levers governments can potentially pull. You've got fiscal spending choices, tax rates, interest rate decisions, managing the money supply, infrastructure investment, education policy, regulation, trade deals. The list goes on. For every single objective we discussed, price stability, low unemployment, economic growth, there were multiple tools listed in our sources.
Yeah.
It makes you wonder, how on earth do policymakers decide at any given moment which specific tool or which complex mix of those tools is the right one to use?
That's the multi-trillion dollar question, isn't it?
Right. With so many options available and knowing that each one probably has different side effects and different time lags before it works. The choice of how to actually pursue these goals must be incredibly complex, just full of hidden trade-offs and potential pitfalls. Something to really think about, maybe, the next time you hear about a new economic policy announcement.